Hello folks, it's your friend Bernie here, and this week's episode of the Swashbuckling Co-working Values Podcast is an interview with Lucy, the inclusive co-worker. And you would be forgiven for thinking that Lucy is a marketer. She's actually what I would call a fantastic writer. She's like an iceberg. I hope this analogy works. So she takes incredibly complex conversations and intersectionalities around inclusion, diversity, equity, accessibility, and sustainability, and writes them in a very clear fashion for people like me to understand. So there's a lot of this stuff that's like vital to the co-working and co-living industry, and she has got her pulse on the zeitgeist of where we could go, where we've been, and where it is right now. You can find her work on the London Co-working Assembly website with Caleb at Brave Corporation, Salto, All Work, Nexodus, and there's probably a few places I've missed off there. Lucy also co-creates Communities the Key podcast with us here on this podcast with Christian from Salto. And what prompted our conversation today is Lucy's again on the panel for our co-working assembly event at the Workspace Design Show, which is at the end of February in 2024. And that panel is Accessible Workspaces, Inclusivity, Language, and the Future of Co-working. And she's on that with Janine and Dom. And you'll find podcasts about them or with them also here on the Co-working Values podcast. And that whole panel is led by David, the founder of Nook, who's a never-ending source of information about neurodiversity in the workplace. And finally, Lucy does guest appearances at the Creative Write Club, which is a writing group that we've been running for years in London co-working spaces. And that's at Town Square Islington, which is the co-working space she's a member of by Old Street Roundabout. It's in that white collar factory building, if you're in London and you know that. Finally, I want to draw attention to everything I just said is in the show notes in the episode. And we're also going to put a GIF there, like an animated GIF from Rayan, which is our co-creator. And it shows how to, and it's to do with accessibility, and it plays out how you can use the Rayan app to rearrange a room in a co-living space. So it's the flow of the room works for someone who's a wheelchair user. And Rayan is an online app. So if you use things like Canva or Miro, or even like the whiteboard in Zoom, it's a no software app that works online where you can design your co-working space, your co-living space, something I would definitely use it for before, because I'm a bit not well thought out. I would have just moved the furniture around in a co-working space I was in to see if I could get an extra desk in there. Now I would use the Rayan app to get all the measurements and the floor plan and everything in there, upload it, and then rearrange it to see how best I could fit a desk in, and then if I could fit two extra desks in and increase my revenue for my co-working space. So link in the show notes to all of that. Thank you for your time and attention, and let's get into the show with Lucy. Hello, folks, and welcome to another swashbuckling episode of the Co-working Values Podcast. And I am absolutely over the moon today to have the world's first and foremost inclusive co-worker in the studio with me. Lucy, what are you known for, and what would you like to be known for?
Well, I think you just mentioned it, actually, the inclusive co-worker is.
Yeah, you know, I blew my opening, didn't I?
Well, you did give it away straight away. So, yeah, it's the inclusive co-worker is what I would like to be. That's pretty much what I'd like to be. I don't really know what to say.
And what? Oh, I know. I've and I think you're known for, just while you recover, you are known for writing a, because I know you'll never say this out loud for yourself, like, you're known for writing a lot of on point, clear words about co-working on the industry.
Yeah, I mean, I like to write about the industry, and the inclusivity point is the sort of main theme that I like to run through it, definitely.
So where did you first get into this? Where did inclusion and the whole concept and atmosphere and environment of that topic become important for you? Where in the world were you?
That is a good question. I was actually just reflecting on that earlier on when I was kind of planning to speak to you, Bernie, I was like, oh, where did, you know, how did this all start? And the kind of topic of inclusion and where I started to kind of become more aware, or was made more aware of it, was when I was living in Scotland in 2019, and I started working with a City Deal project, and one of their kind of government funded projects was an intergenerational village in Stirling area. And this project was like based on some of the research that they'd done around people with dementia, because there's like a dementia center at Stirling University. And they found that there's like a really big link between dementia and design, and like how somebody who has dementia is like kind of navigates through spaces. And like, for example, people with dementia, they have like a reduced kind of like they have like a sensitivity to light, so they need like a lot of daylight, a lot of natural lighting coming into a space. And it's really important when you design spaces with people with people who have dementia in mind. So that's maybe thinking about like an older generation, for example, that that space has lots of daylight and natural lighting coming into it. So that was kind of like the first time that I was sort of made aware of there was like a link between, say, like design, for example, and then and sort of inclusivity and things like that. And then I, through this project, I went and studied a master's in interior design, and my whole kind of proposal and project was all around this idea of like intergenerational living and like how do we make spaces more inclusive. It kind of got bigger than just thinking about people with dementia, because I started like thinking about how I identify in this as well. I think my tutor was like, as a woman, like what's your take on it? And I started kind of thinking about that a bit deeper and reading about it a bit more, and finding that like the world isn't necessarily made for women. And I know there's a book that we've both mentioned, which is the Invisible Women book by
I thought we were going to say Feminist City.
I still haven't read that yet. That's one of your recommendations. It's The Invisible Women by, I've got it up here because I've got like a little book list that I put in your one as well. Invisible Women, Exposing Data Bias in a World Designed for Men by Caroline Criado Perez. And it just exposes so much around how, spaces aren't necessarily designed for women. That was a real eye-opener in terms of like research. I also looked at, there's another book which is called Ground Control, which exposes like the displacement of communities for like spaces that have been gentrified. So there's a lot of like literature around this, but it's kind of, you've got to like kind of dig for it and kind of like know about it, which I didn't know about at all until, until like the last few years. So that's kind of like my first foray into this whole inclusivity topic, let's say, linked with design initially. And then basically like when I was doing my master's, pandemic happened and couldn't really continue doing like interiors anymore. So I went back to like the marketing side, met our dear friend Kate Maialini from Colive, and we love Kate, and started kind of, and then started working in co-living. And then it's kind of just since coming to London and her introducing me to you, Bernie, that I've sort of got more involved in co-working. And as I've been into co-working spaces, in conversations, especially the London co-working conversations, there's a lot of dialogue around inclusivity. I think you're one of the main communities that kind of talks about it. And I was like, oh my gosh, like all these conversations really relate to that my master's and what I was like exposed to in Scotland. So yeah, that's a very, very long answer for your question.
That was an in-depth answer. I want to ask you, it's exactly what I wanted. With interior design, when you set off into that, was it like, you know, designing shopping centers or houses or office space? What got you into that?
Oh, I like before, so I did the master's, but like there was like a brief gap between like my undergraduate and my master's where I went to Southeast Asia and I worked on some like property projects. I actually studied art history originally. So I think that, I mean, I love spaces, I love interiors and the home, and the art history was like kind of like the link to interiors really. But I went out to Southeast Asia and had worked on some property projects with some people, designed their interiors, and then was like, oh, I actually want to do more of this. Then weirdly, like, went to study it, and instead of it being more of like a practical course, it became quite conceptual. And I was like, I'm just going to write. I actually wrote, like, the whole thing was just writing. So I just wrote about this concept of like inclusive spaces, more in a broader sense of like urban design than like an actual like kind of interior space itself. But you can apply quite a lot of the studies and theories and ideas to any kind of space. And I think the whole, like, I don't know, the whole argument is about this fact, is it a welcoming space? Is it an inclusive space? Like, has everyone been included in the discussions around the design of that space? And have their needs been considered and brought in when designing a space?
It's huge. So the other thing I'm dying to ask you is about, we'll get back to this in a second, but this whole thing about like public space, and there's a massive echo. This is one of the things I'm still trying to work out how to probably talk about without being angry, but like, you know, co-working and co-living is like a really cool industry, and you know, that's why I hang around it all the time. But there is this like co-working for the 1% and then everyone else, and the same happens in space, because there was like in lockdown, like public areas were one thing for one economic person, one economic segment, and something else for another. Can you remember what I mean?
I think I remember we had like us having this conversation at some point around like, yeah, who's like included in those spaces, and like to actually find out that like a lot of open spaces and public spaces are actually like owned by somebody and are sort of like designed and created in a way, and the things that go on in those spaces are to include some people but to exclude others. I think I remember us having this conversation, like maybe it was like a year ago, and I remember you were like not happy.
Yeah. Yeah, there's Stefan, who is part of the research group for collaborative spaces, did this article in The Guardian that did really well about 5 years ago. So you walk through London, like Broadgate is a great example. There's all these open public spaces, but really it's all private land. So a lot of space in London you think is like all around the old mayor's office on the South Bank. It's all public space, but you know, you can get arrested for trespassing if it was convenient, which I'm going a little bit off topic here. But because very often, you know, this happens to me, I'll read 10 books and then applying it in real life is, frustrating. Because I can't find the venue to do it, or I just have it in my head and I don't know how to articulate it to a group of people. So after that grounding, you could probably have you and Anthony Slumbers could probably do something like art history and, you know, design, like, What a lethal combination you'd be. How do you beyond the writing, like how do you activate what you find out and think in life, and like what would you like us as an industry to be doing, or if an industry is a bit too broad, like in a co-working space, what would you like to see?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think writing about this topic is a good starting point. From the point of view, it's opening that conversation and that dialogue around inclusivity, and I wonder whether has it been done before, but I guess the more it's kind of mentioned and the more that people read about it and bring it in and think about it and then act on it, that's making a change. So I guess one of the sort of changes I'm seeing in the industry is around more transparency around this idea of inclusivity and how workspaces are being more inclusive, but also thinking, like questioning and being critical of their inclusivity, I guess, policies and practices, because sometimes by thinking they're being more inclusive, they're actually not. And it's a really like broad topic, isn't it? Because there's so much to consider in terms of like inclusivity? Is that welcoming everyone, or is that welcoming a specific community? If you are for a specific community, are you inclusive? And I guess the main kind of like to find out is asking your community, and your community are the sort of best group of people, or like task force, let's say, to help you reach that side of things. I mean, I'm just a writer. I'm kind of interested to see what people's kind of take on inclusivity is, what people's take on workspace design is, and how, and also like the community element as well, because I think inclusivity and community come hand in hand. Like, how do you build that community? How do you bring people together? And it's interesting to kind of explore that through either, like, I mean, I'm a massive like LinkedIn user, so I take in a lot through writing and LinkedIn and whatever content's out there. But I know there's so many spaces and people who are doing things kind of quietly without showing for it. And I think that's like, yeah, that's an interesting part of it as well. So
I'm going to say make it safe, you know, so make it, you know, like I'm not a burden, you know. And other people just, I don't think they're being nasty, but they just don't know how to do that. I would venture to suggest, Lucy, that comes down to like the kind of atmosphere that's at the core of, when I say co-working community, I think it could be like co-working community or, you know, office or...
Yeah, like it's much broader than just like, like workspace. Co-working, isn't it? Like any workspace, I suppose, or working environment even. And yeah, I know what you mean. It's around the culture that's in those spaces, and the sort of the way that people treat each other as well is really key to this. So I mean, like in co-working, we obviously have like the role of the community manager, for instance, and community managers are really great to kind of put those policies in place. Although, I mean, it's kind of like, yeah, you want to, and also like accepting people for who they are and how they fit in the community. I mean, you know, I should imagine that most workspaces are like accepting of people, and like it's genuinely down to being like a kind of aware person and a good person in terms of like how you treat other people. But I mean, in terms of like establishing and promoting that inclusive culture, I think like a community manager is like a really great role to play in this. But there's also a sense of that community as well, and how they treat one another, and how a community kind of acts towards each other, if that makes sense.
I'm going to jump into the article you did for Nexodus. Had some, at the beginning there was a percent, is it like 25% of the UK population are
20
gigantic
of the UK population have a disability, with 23% of respondents being working age adults.
So was that that was by the government, wasn't it? Because the link in the put a link in the Nexodus article to that. So like a quarter of the population. I'm going to put you on the spot here. Should have checked this before we record it. So 23% are working age adults. Is that, you know, at one end there's, you know, I've got ADHD, and at the other end, you know, I'm bedbound. You know, is it a complete spectrum?
I believe that this survey, because it's a survey of UK households, is kind of a survey of the spectrum, and it's like for, and it's 24% of people who identify with a disability, and disability, inability, obviously don't just mean around like physical accessibility, it is a much broader term. And I know that we've spoken about this, Bernie, and also you've got a lot of shared a lot of content on this, kind of, I guess, the definition of what accessibility means, which thank you for mentioning the article I wrote for Nexus, because that is exactly what we kind of explored in that article. What does accessibility mean? When we typically think about the word accessibility, we do think about the first thing that comes to many of our minds is physical accessibility, but accessibility can encompass many more definitions and examples. So there's obviously like, well, there's a term that I think you wrote about, Bernie, which was invisible disability, or maybe it was David from Nook. Invisible disabilities, which can include like vision loss, hearing impairments, learning disabilities. There's also something that's known as situational disability, which is how accessibility can be considered from a permanent point of view and also a temporary point of view. That's a quote from Ivan Poussier. Ivan,
he wrote the. I've got to like self-congratulate myself. That was a book on women in co-working. I'm the only guy mentioned.
Oh,
in that
no.
Book.
Oh, interesting. But isn't
that is the peak of my co-working career.
And I guess you picked it out, and then I've picked it out for this as well. So, but it's definitely like a very on point kind of definition. And this article also explores what accessibility means. And we also explore what neurodiversity means and what like how neurodiverse individuals can be cared for and nurtured and supported in the workplace as well. Because we have like the ability to work remotely, it means that a lot of people can choose not to come into the office, and they might choose not to come into the office because they don't feel comfortable in that space. I mean, co-working is a fantastic concept in terms of, I mean, obviously it's like just working together, but a lot of workspaces are very like open spaces that facilitate through their design for people to come together and socialize and chat. But for some people, particularly people who are neurodiverse, that sort of space is really overwhelming and stressful. And and 15% of the UK population identify as neurodivergent. So, and that includes having ADHD or learning disabilities as well. And there's the office or, and again, this, like we were saying earlier, it's not just about workspaces, but about any space might not be designed or created for people who are neurodivergent. So, for example, go on.
Sorry, go on.
Well, I was just going to say that in this article, we kind of talk about neurodivergent friendly spaces, which are like quiet zone. I mean, just name dropping Nook again. Obviously, the wellness pods are designed with neurodivergent people's needs in mind as well. So, it's like as an operator thinking about what kind of different spaces can you provide for different kind of people, and thinking about again around this, if inclusivity means everyone, how do we design spaces that encompass everyone's needs as well?
That's sorry to interrupt you, that was so mansplaining of me. I couldn't wait to get my line out. That is so important, because I want, probably in the last 5 years, as I've, you know, basically there's a trajectory of when I started hanging out with David from Nook and having 1,000-mile-an-hour conversations, and got to understand, you know, my own dyslexia, ADHD, and whatever else is going on. I thought there was something wrong with me because I just couldn't concentrate in some workspaces. So if it's very echoey, it's really hard. If you go to Main Yard Studios in Hackney, where I was for a long time, it's that the room there is really like big and open, but the sound in there, it doesn't echo. And there's this kind of delicious stillness in the air, even when there's quite a lot of people in there. And you know, I just worked really well in there. Whereas if I go to maybe something with a higher ceiling where there's more echo, the echoing thing just is like, it's the distracting equivalent of someone scraping their nails down a chalkboard. I find it really, really hard to concentrate. And I thought I don't want to sound like a victim here, but like if I'm in certain places, I can concentrate really well and I get this like warm, huggy feeling and the flow comes and I'm working really well and I can get lost and absorbed. And that's where a lot of stuff happens, and it's really important. And then if I go somewhere, particularly if it's echoey, it destroys, I cannot concentrate. And it is like being, trying to sleep on a plane that's going through constant gentle turbulence. So I really get that. And there's lots of examples. And when you go to, when I'm in London, I go to Creative Works a lot and I sit in the nook there and Elena Giroli has to like pull me out of it because it's a community asset, not a Bernie Mitchell asset.
I love that. I still haven't been to Creative Works and I've heard so much about it. But it's interesting you say about echoing because I haven't heard that being someone bring that up before. So I think there's just so much to consider, isn't there? And it's so individualistic as well. I'm certainly someone who struggles in like open spaces. I do get distracted very easily by other people chatting. I like to join in the conversation. I like to get carried away with the conversation. And sometimes it's hard to kind of bring it back to like the focus time and the focus work. But I've heard that a lot of people do thrive in those environments. So again, it's like, it's so individualistic. It just depends. And this is the kind of situational kind of example of this whole conversation. It's just there is no one size fits all approach, and every individual works in different ways and has different needs. And that's something that's really, it's really, really hard when you're designing a space to consider every person's needs. But I think one of the most important things is just to chat to people about what they need and to get a really good sense of everyone and bring everyone to the table as well. It's really important.
Just before we go, that everyone's needs. I remember it might have been 2019. I was like, you know, hanging out with my mate Neil Usher, and I was neurodivergent because the word was being chucked around like ridiculously. And I mean, I like to be cool in this, but I thought if I shouted out the word neurodivergent in front of Neil, he'd be, oh, well done, Bernie, you know what that is. And he made the point, and it was a really good explanation. It's like, if someone's really neurodivergent, they probably won't even leave their house. You know, it's like trying too hard to accommodate for too many people is unrealistic.
It's impossible, isn't it? Because
yeah, it's miscommunicated.
Yeah, and that's what I find that word inclusivity can be quite challenging, because I totally appreciate it's inclusivity include means to include everyone, but it is impossible to include every single person and every single person's needs. I do think that a lot of workspaces have a sort of a community in mind that they're catering for, and that's really important to kind of understand what their needs are. And I think that's like a really good starting point as well. I don't know, do you have another opinion on that?
Well, I'm glad you asked. There's a couple of things. There is one, Priya Parker, somebody wrote a book about getting together in community, which I can put in the show notes. And she pointed out very elegantly that, you know, when you make a tribal community, you're going to have to leave people out. So if you make a tribe for people that like, you know, late 80s house music, you're going to miss out the Taylor Swift fans. And it's okay. We all need to go somewhere. And there's a big difference between making a tribe of people that are like obnoxious and, you know, storming political buildings in Washington and, you know, things like that. And then there's like just being a group of people to get together. So even in Town Square in Islington, where you are with all those people, that as a particular, you know, it's a very open, inclusive, safe, welcoming environment, but it's a particular group of people. Yeah. You know, if there was like a load of craft beer drinking, pizza swilling tech bros in there, they get on okay, but they probably would feel like they need to temper their behavior.
It wouldn't be a space for me.
And the other thing is, no, narrowly missed being that. And the other thing is, as someone who finds it hard to concentrate in certain places, you have to take responsibility for the environment you need to be. So I will, like, I know I just cannot help chatting to people. So I stick my headphones in when I know I have to get on with something. So when I come and see you folks there, I it's so easy to sit around that table with you and Sangeeta and Anna and start chatting. And even if I sit down and work, you will say something and I'll just, you won't distract me. I will get distracted by what you're saying, not that you've done something to distract me, which is very different. So, you know, I should go and sit in a corner and organize my work environment, not say, well, Anna, it doesn't really work for me in here because you people keep talking. You know, I hope that came out right.
It does. I think that's another aspect of co-working in terms of like actually going to the workspace. Like I do go to Town Square to socialize as well. So I'm not going there just to like, have like a full like 8-hour day of like, you know, plugging myself in. I love the conversations that happen at Town Square and I really enjoy being part of that, albeit I get too involved in that, which I see I'm exactly the same as you, Bernie, whereas like when someone starts talking about something you really want to join in, I'm like, right, unplug, I'm joining in that conversation and we have a nice chat. But I think that that's where like that is what attracts people to co-working. It is those spontaneous conversations that happen and those chats as well. You don't get those when you're working from home. I like to work from home as well for the sort of like head down stuff, like the creative things that happen. But I like to go into the workspace to hang out with people. And I think something you said earlier around this like tribe concept as well, like my tribe, if you like, at Town Square are the freelancers. Like we have a shared experience and we're a shared set of experiences really, because we're all working alone and working for ourselves and working towards a certain goal that obviously differs across the group, but we're actually like have very similar challenges. A lot of us are content creators. We've obviously got like, you know, our friends Sangeeta and Tim who are podcasters, and then I'm a writer. So we're creating different types of content, but the challenges are quite similar and shared. And that's something that really brings us together and has made us stronger group within the workspace and as friends as well. Like outside of the workspace, we spend time together. It's really, really special. And I think I've really found my community and sense of belonging in that sense. So I think like we sort of spoke about the design side of things at the start of this conversation. Now it's like, it's more about the people. And I think the people are possibly the most important thing. And there's something that I sort of explored through my work when I was writing my master's, but also I was reflecting on this week as well, because I wrote a post about coming into the workspace when I didn't have to. And it's like when people gather together in whatever sort of space they're in, whether that is a workspace or whether that's just outside or wherever it is, like in someone's house, that space kind of like transcends itself. It becomes more than just like a space. So I was kind of thinking, well, when we're all together and we're having such a good time and we're talking and we're sharing our experiences and opening up to people, that makes the space more than just a place to work. Like you said, the word safe space, really important. We feel safe I feel safe in that space. I can't speak for everyone, but I feel safe in that space. And I feel like it is more than a workplace for me. It's something so much more than that. I can't even like put into words what it means to me, but it means something so much greater than just a workplace. It really does. And I wonder if in other spaces, and I'm sure that this is the case, that other people feel that way when they've sort of met their community, met their group as well.
I've had that feeling with different groups of people over the years in different spaces, and I was just like listening to that, and I know what you mean, and I'm sure many people listening to this will know that too. That was really cool, Lucy. Thank you. Where can we find you online? Can we just put Lucy McNally into Google and you'll show up?
You can, but only if you know how to spell it. My son is very difficult to spell. So it's Lucy McNally, McNally. Come and find me at my website. My LinkedIn is normally where I put out content and thoughts and writing. You can find me there.
We'll link to that in the show notes, and I'm not going to list them all, but Lucy writes all over the industry on stuff. It's more than stuff, isn't it? Stuff to do with co-working stuff.
Co-working community. Inclusive.
And we work together. If you're listening to this, you'll listen to the Salto podcast as well, which we do with Chris from Salto. And she's the engine room on that. When I go off in a direction that's not appropriate, she brings me back. So I'm very grateful for that. And I just love the way you conduct yourself in the industry. You're really, really valuable. And I really appreciate you
too, Ben. You've done so much for me and my ability to connect in the co-working industry as well. So I very appreciate
everything you've done. You're very welcome. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you go to your nearest search engine and type in London Co-working Assembly, European Co-working Assembly, or Co-working Values Podcast, which is this podcast here, you can sign up for our email lists and find out what's going on in terms of events and initiatives. The Co-working Assembly is part of a series of projects dotted all around Europe, and too many to list here, but they range from co-working, co-living, inclusivity, which we talked a lot about here. There's the co-working idea handbook, which is just about to be published and probably is by the time you hear this. And also there's our refugee project and the co-working values podcast and European co-working day. I'm going to stop there because I run out of words. Thank you very much. Be careful out there. It is a jungle.